Welcome to Last Wednesday, everybody. It's good to have you here tonight. You know, as Erica was saying at the beginning, you know, Last Wednesday for us is an opportunity to really lean in a little bit closer with God and with each other. You know, I look around and I see a lot of folks who make things happen around here, people who serve on the weekends in Kids Club, people who serve in First Impressions, people who are doing amazing things in spiritual growth. And this is an opportunity for us to come and get a little bit of fuel, a little bit of recharge, and just connect deeper with what God is doing in our midst. And tonight is a night that I'm really excited about. So we've been in this series, maybe you've heard about this, we've been in a series where we've been talking about what is the new man, what's the picture of manhood we get from the scriptures, and Brian's been laying out the five marks that really distinguish men from boys. We've been really drawing a very clear line and recognizing that men have some characteristics that make them a man. One, men work a plan for their life. Somebody's clapping for work, that's right. Amen to that. Men are willing to take a minority position. They don't always have to be in the majority. They have the courage to stand in the minority on issues that they care about. Men are team players. This weekend, I thought Brian just nailed it when he talked about men in protection mode. Men protect. It was a powerful call for all of us. I really resonated with that this weekend. And this weekend, we're ending the series with talking about what does it mean for a man to have a vision for their life. And, you know, we do series like this around here, and we were talking about today, like, what is it about this series? What it's resonating. It's resonating with men. It's resonating with women. What is it? And I think it's that it speaks to something primal in us, something that just says, you know what, I believe that there is something. If you're a guy, there's just a part of you that says, there's something about being a man that I need to be taught. There's something that needs to be modeled, and I think in this series, we're getting handles for that, and that's an encouraging thing. I know it's been encouraging for me. In fact, one of the letters that we got, emails from the series, I wanted to share it with you guys. And actually, this is from a guy who's attending Crossroads Westside, and I just think it's really neat to think about how what we're doing is impacting not just what goes on here in Oakley, but all around the city. So after the first 2 weeks of the series, he sent this email in. He said, "The past two services have been, without question, the most personal I've had in my brief time at Crossroads. If at any point since the first service in the series, any man in attendance did not walk out and feel both better about himself and at the same time feel like he had much work to do, he seems to be missing the point. Every individual man in attendance has weaknesses and strengths that are being highlighted in the series. That goes without saying. It is very seldom that someone looks you in the face and tells you essentially, man up. My journey with God is in its infancy. I need all the tools and help I can get as I continue in my quest to know God and His Son. This is one of the best tools I've been given to date." I mean, that for me, that's the power of what God has been doing and speaking through this. And it's just a very encouraging thing. And so tonight, I want to do something special, and that is go a little bit deeper, not with what God has been teaching me or Brian, but what has God been teaching other guys in our community in the midst of the New Man series. So tonight we're going to hear from four men, and each of them is going to be sharing what they've been learning in the midst of the series. So they've got about 5 minutes apiece to do that. So you're going to get to hear from a cross-section of guys, cross-section in terms of age, cross-section in terms of place in life, kids, no kids, all of that. Cross-section in terms of what they do for a living, and it's going to be really cool to be built into by these guys as they share with us what God's been doing in their life and what He's been calling them to in the midst of this manhood series. And we do this tonight because of scriptures like this in 1 Corinthians 14:26, which says, "When you come together, each one has a hymn, a lesson, a revelation, a tongue, or an interpretation. Let all things be done for building up." And what this is really talking about is it should be a natural rhythm when you get together with other followers of Jesus to be learning from what God is teaching your brothers and sisters tonight from our brothers. And that's what we're really tapping into tonight. So each of them is going to be sharing a revelation. They're going to be sharing maybe a lesson that they learned. Maybe they'll sing a hymn. I don't know. Maybe they'll sing a hymn. I don't think anybody's planning on singing a hymn. But we want this to be an environment where we can all tap in and learn from a cross-section of guys. What's God been teaching them in the midst of this series? And actually, after they share, we're going to have them all up here, and we'll just have a little bit of dialogue, some Q&A, and we're bringing back our text in question feature. We did this for a series a while back, heavyweight series. That number is going to show up on the screen, and as the guys come up on the screen tonight, as the guys come up and speak, if you have questions that are prompted by what you hear, particularly men in the room, questions you've been thinking about with this series, things you'd love to just hear in a conversation with a cross-section of men, a little bit more dialogue about, I want you to text those questions in right now, And I'm going to be capturing those as I sit down over here. And after all four of these men come up, we'll have a little bit of time to just dialogue and have some Q&A. So I really think tonight is going to be a fun, fun time. And I'm really excited for all of the guys who have said, yeah, I'll do this. I just went to some friends of mine, some people I knew, and said, hey, if you've been impacted by this series, I'd love for you to share with our community what that's been. And these guys said yes to being here. So I want you to give a warm welcome to them, starting with my friend Lou Meyer.
I'm really glad I have a chance to spend some time with you, because this during this series there were three things that really impacted me so profoundly. And the first one was really the concept of awareness. And it occurred to me going through this that I have to become aware of choices. And it also occurred to me that I could live my life kind of stumbling along and following a world's formula where I could be very irresponsible for myself, become a victim, not step up to the table and actually protect my family, their emotions, their feelings, their core, their heart. I could not stand up and ever show up and be part of a enhancement where I could actually use my God-given skills and talents, develop them, and apply them to serve someone else. I could really go through and follow the world's formula and be a boy the rest of my life. Or when Chuck and Brian get up and start talking about, hey, there's a formula that comes from God, and God's formula is completely different than this. And what God's formula says is we do have a vision for the future. We don't spend down to zero. We take care of our families. We use our God-given skills, step up to the plate, and really excel and be extraordinary in serving other people. And when I look at these two things, I say, you know, there is such a unique, distinct difference, but I have to be aware of these. And I could stumble into a service and hope that it shows up with the right message. Or the other thing that occurred to me is I could volunteer for like building blocks for marriage or join fathers where there's a very high probability that we're going to be talking about these things that I can relate to and compare and contrast. But it always comes down to, from this series, I've got to make choices in my life, and they're very distinct choices between God's way and formula and the world's way. But where do I come up with the courage to do that, which is the second thing that really struck me, because everything that they've been talking about as far as being a man, in my opinion, takes courage to make those choices, to stand out in the crowd, to be the minority when it takes the minority to change things. Where do I get this? And the only place that I can get it, because I certainly don't have it naturally, is I've got to rely on this incredible Father that I have, that for whatever reason, God wants to play a role in my life, and he's interested in every little bit and detail. And I've come to believe that not only does he understand that he has to be involved with these things, but I've got a God that is willing and ready and able to jump in and do things for me that I could never do on my own. As long as I'm willing to do the things that I can do and be responsible for myself, God comes in, sweeps in, and gives me the courage maybe to stand up and do the things that I need to do to be a man going forward, and I have to identify what those differences are. But the most, I'll tell you, the most convicting part of this whole thing has been the whole thing on how do we protect, how do we become, as men, protectors of our wives, in particular in our family. And I have an incredible wife that we've known each other for 20 years. And she's incredibly intelligent, she's creative, she is inspiring, she has great intuition, and I've always felt over the last 20 years that I should play the role of coach, that I need to push her to the edge of comfort zone, break through the comfort zone. You know, get involved in situations that you're uncomfortable and feel the fear and do it anyway. I felt that my job was to help her grow by putting her into maybe situations that weren't very comfortable, but she would grow through this and become more strong and a better person. And all the while, she's been asking me, hey, I need you to protect my heart. I need you to protect my feelings. I need you to be a rock. I need you to be on my team. I need to know those things. Well, here I am sitting here listening to Chuck Mingo and Brian Tome, and all of a sudden, they use the right word, or it's the right, maybe the Holy Spirit comes along and says, hey, knucklehead, this is what your wife has been telling you for 20 years. And all of a sudden it occurs to me, hey, I should be a protector, not a pusher of things. And you know, I don't think it's unique to my wife. I think there are a lot of women in this society today who are like my wife, who are asked to be strong and tough and fight and sharp. And then we as husbands then expect them to turn on a dime and now be intimate and soft and caring and nurturing. But I don't believe after this series that our wives could ever do that unless we can be the protector who's standing there like the rock, always on their team, ready to protect, ready to be there so that they can be vulnerable and open and accepting with us. I don't think we can ask one without the other. And so what I've really learned from the series is I've got to really lean into God and ask for the courage to make the right choices so that I can do those things that I just talked about. Thanks. Thank you.
My name is Tony Woolfolk. I'm on staff here in Oakley. And this series began to impact me before it even started. There was an all-staff email that went out looking for man voices. I read it. I ignored it. I said, hey, I've had my 15 minutes of fame. It's somebody else's turn. And apparently somebody with a higher pay grade than my own decided that on the date of recording, hey, they need you back here in the studio at 3:45. And when that happened, you know, I'm thinking to myself, okay, why me? You know, what's special about me? You know, Crossroads is full of spiritual heavyweights. Why do they want to spend their time with a lightweight such as myself? And so I just began doing all kinds of inventory in my life and thinking, okay, have I been praying enough? Have I been reading the right things? So forth and so on. And even fast forward to last week. Again, I'm coming in the building, minding my own business. Here comes Chuck Mingo. Hey, I need to ask a favor. Well, is this a facilities favor or a Tony favor? You know. And he asked me, and I tried to get out of it. I was like, well, hey, man, you know, I usually work on last Wednesday. Since I work here, you know, that didn't fly one bit. And so again, I'm in this mode of where I'm doing inventory in my life. Do I even deserve to be up there telling people things of a spiritual nature? You know, there's nothing special about me. And then just last Sunday, as I was on my way to pick up my nephew Micah to bring him here to service with me, something came to my mind, and it was actually one of those little items that I had tucked away in that little black box hidden in a shelf that Brian talked about a few weeks ago. And back in the late 80s or so, it must have been around a holiday, because all of my nephews that are usually out of town were in town. And what I did was I gathered up as many of the nine as I could fit into my 1978 Datsun B210. And I stopped, I got some beer, I got some Crown Royal, and I took them to my apartment and started showing them porno flicks. As I'm thinking about this on the way to pick up Micah, it really hit me pretty hard. I was like, man, I can't believe I actually did something like that. And then I'll go pick him up, and I'm trying to wipe the tears for Micah, come out, see that I've been crying. And we get to church, and an hour later, Brian's talking about being a protector. And he was talking about protecting women sexually. And I was like, well, for crying out loud, you know, I got a room full of my nephews, and I wasn't protecting them sexually either. You know, these are potential husbands and fathers, and I'm just leading them down a path of destruction. And so, all week, I've been kind of in a bad place, just wrestling with, man, oh, man, oh, man. And even when I've been shaving, you know, it's kind of hard because I got to look at myself, and it's like, man, this is a rough one here. And really, the saddest part of this whole story for me is that Paul, Stevie, and Garland, and they were between the ages of 17 and 25, died violent deaths. And so there's nothing that I can say to them. There's no godly counsel I can give them. There's nothing that I can do in my life to redeem that night. And so what I've gotten out of this series is that I have got to be more aggressive. I have got to be more aggressive in my approach to leading people to Christ, because there are eternal consequences to the passivity that I've been living with all these years. And I've also learned that though I may be far, far from being the man that God ultimately have me to be, I thank him with every core, everything within me to thank him with, that I'm not that little boy I was back then. Thank you.
That's going to be a little tough to follow. Choking up a little bit. My name is Chris Berry. I've been part of the Crossroads community for about 2.5 years. And there's been some great messages that I've heard and experienced in some great series, but nothing has really hit me like the New Man series. A few weeks ago, on the first week that Brian opened up this series, he gave the 5 marks of a man. And it was the first time I sat in this room with 3,500 people, and everyone disappeared. No one else was in here but myself. Brian was off the stage, and it was God talking right to me. I've never experienced that in my life. And as I left, you know, I was a little kind of shaken up. I immediately text Brian. I just said, thank you, thank you, thank you. I asked him to put his number up there just so you could all have it to text him when you need it. They didn't think that was a good idea. But I was leaving with a great friend of mine who I come to church with every Sunday, and we were out in the parking lot, and I looked at her and I said, did you feel that? Did you feel that? How great was that? Did it resonate with you like it did me? She said, well, I'm not a man, so a little difficult. I said, touche, good point. I said, you know, I felt like God was talking to me. I said, you know, out of those 5 marks, you know, 3 of them, I'm a boy. She said, 3 of them. 3 of them. Very good point. And she was serious. And as one of my best friends, that it did sting. But I can't talk about all 5 marks and why I need to work to be a man in all 5. But one that really stood out was, again, as the past 2 guys have talked about, being a protector and not a predator, especially when it comes to relationships. And I'll give you a little backstory. I grew up in a very privileged household with the best parents ever. I've been married for 35 years. If there was an 80s sitcom based on a great family, it would be our family. My dad, great father. He just taught by his actions, not by his words. Perfect role model. So I had all these building blocks, you know, as I became a young man. Well, boy. The building blocks were there to be in a great relationship. But I was using these building blocks, and I was using, you know, good manners as a weapon. And, you know, the past few weeks I've been looking back on all my dating relationships, and I have been a boy and a predator, and I've treated hearts very carelessly and recklessly, and I've treated women very badly. Sorry, Mom, if you're hearing this. But I was talking to a friend just a little while ago. We just had a little text message conversation, and she asked me, you know, why did you act like that? Why would you cheat in relationships? Why were you always just going after, you know, women at bars? And she asked, you know, was it the adrenaline rush that you might get caught or you want to win? And I really thought about it, and I said, no, it was all about the power, right? It was about the power. But this series has taught me that it's not powerful to take, right? That's easy. That's what crooks and thieves do. The powerful thing to do is to protect. And, you know, I really feel that Chuck and Brian are giving all the men here, you know, a playbook to live by. And this is kind of, you know, 5 weeks of me kind of, you know, dying as Chris Berry, the boy, and hopefully being resurrected as a man. Thank you.
Strong. Wow. I didn't ask to hear what these guys were going to say before they got up here. So just like you, I'm being impacted deeply by just your honesty, guys. There's one more speaker for tonight, and he was up here a couple months ago when we were talking about suffering. His name is Ryan Atkins, and Ryan, several years ago, was injured and actually paralyzed from the neck down from a car accident. And gosh, you want to talk about somebody who has perspective on life, God, just a guy that I really respect. It's him. In fact, he has a blog, flatonmyback.com, where he blogs about his journey toward recovery and just the incredible things that God's doing in his life. And so, gosh, it was the week after the Protector Week. Actually, we were talking and dialoguing about this, and Ryan had had a conversation with Brian and kind of let me in on that conversation as well. And his question was about, you know, what does it look like to protect when you're in a chair, and just the journey that he's been on around that I thought would be really awesome for all of us to hear. So this is my friend Ryan Atkins. Let's welcome him, everybody.
Nice. Thanks, Chuck. It's great to be back. It's really been an awesome opportunity just to reflect on manhood and the new man. And one thing, you know, as I was just kind of brainstorming the past few days, as Chuck mentioned, I was seeing the different videos on the site, and I noticed a trend, and it evoked a pretty in-depth question for me as a man. And I think we need to take a look at this slide. I began to wonder, like, how am I supposed to be a man without plaid in my closet? And Chuck, I don't know if that's part of the dress code here, but I'm surprised you let me on stage with a different kind of shirt. But in all seriousness, it's really just been neat to need to see the things that God's been doing in my life and how He's continuing to shape me as a man. And and as the other guys have mentioned, it's for me, one thing in particular, the idea of being a protector. You know, in terms of wrestling with different ideas of being a man, I kind of wonder, you know, okay, how and as a with lacking the when the confidence lacks from paralysis and in my ability to protect, how am I supposed to, whether it be to run, to jump, to fight someone off, to be the hero or anything like that, how am I supposed to live up to that expectation or everything like that? And just to add to it, I mean, I opened up my email this morning, and thanks to Crossroads the Daily, I see the new man is a physical protector. Like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. They want me to talk on this tonight? And so I really began to wrestle, okay, what is it? What does it look like? You know, I may go out in public with my girlfriend or sister and think about, okay, if there's some threat to them, what am I supposed to do? And, you know, if I'm faced with the reality, you know, when I'm out, it's, okay, the person I'm with, they're going to be the one that has to look out for me. And I think, how does that sound? You know, I'm a 25-year-old male, and my little sister's my bodyguard. That sure sounds manly. So, you know, I think I was, I realized I was believing the illusion that my ability to be a man was tied to my physical capabilities. And, you know, I look to the example of Jesus, and you know, he wasn't the guy that was beating up guys in alleys. And to be honest, you know, over the past few years, it's not as if I've had to have someone cover me or, you know, fight people off. You know, I've been okay. And, you know, and I think about before I got hurt, you know, I really didn't have to there really a situation had not come up in my life where I really had to be a physical presence in order to, for my well-being or those around me. And so when I see the example of Jesus, the ultimate God-man, you know, he wasn't some sissy just sitting around the fields petting sheep all day, and he was a man who stood up for the truth that he was brought here for and ultimately murdered for, and, you know, his manliness was also in the way that he protected, specifically women, and, you know, he perfected that in the way he demonstrated it with his friends like Mary and Martha and the prostitutes he befriended, and, you know, they knew, they didn't see him as this guy that was going to fight people off, but the ultimate man who could be counted on to listen, to comfort, to be a safe place where these women knew they could trust, and this wasn't a man who had his own agenda to meet his own physical desires. And, you know, looking at the examples of Jesus and realizing that my physical capabilities are not tied to my ability to be a man is really just like boosted my confidence as a man. And, you know, I may not be able to hold the door open right now, but, you know, I can listen. I may not be able to bench 300 pounds anymore. Well, I never could do that. But you know, I can be intentional about being an encourager to someone. You know, I may not be able to punch someone in the jugular, but I can be a safe place for someone, specifically women, can share, can feel, can trust, can feel comfortable that it's that I am a man who has their interest at heart. And, you know, seeing the example of Jesus, it continues to spur me on to want to be a better man. And, you know, each of us as men, we may fail to live up to certain aspects of manhood, but when I see the example of Jesus, I know that regardless of my physical circumstances right now, I can continue to be the best man that I can be. Thanks.
Awesome, awesome. Let's give these guys a hand again. Man, just so rich. So rich, so honest in what you shared. And this is awesome. And we do not lack for questions from you guys as a follow-up. And so I want to just spend the rest of our time. We've got about 15 minutes before we will have communion. So hang out and enjoy this dialogue a little bit. And you can keep texting in questions. I'll try to multitask as best I can. But I'm going to start with this one because it came in, and I think it definitely tapped in on a theme. Very interesting how this through line of being a protector that really resonated. And I don't think that was just because it was the last message. Maybe, you know, you might think, oh, that was the last one we talked about. But I think that tapped into something. This weekend really felt like a call to me personally. So I'll start with this one. This is from a woman in the audience. She says, as a woman, I can tell you that the idea that the men around us would protect us lifts about 1,000,000 pounds off of our collective shoulders and hearts. I am independent, strong, and smart, but yes, men, I need your protection. So the question is, give an example of a situation with your wife or any woman where you handled it differently now that you know the importance of being a protector. And so I know for some of us, we're kind of in the journey on that. But if you can think of an example of where you handle that differently, that would be good. And I'll actually start on this one, because as I think about it with my wife is also strong-willed and very independent. But one of the things that I have found is wherever I model leadership and just step in and take the lead, she really does love that. It does resonate. So one of the things that comes to mind for me is, and I'll talk this at last Wednesday because you guys will understand, as Crossroads has grown, more and more people notice me and my wife when we're out in public. And for me, the extrovert, that's great. But for my wife, the introvert, that's not always great. And we've had to go through seasons where she said, I feel like, you know, when we go out, I can't really be with you because it's always other people. And so I've had to learn how to really have caring, kind ways to tell people, not right now. Not right now. Love you. Love that you go to Crossroads. Love that God is doing work in your life. I'm doing work in my marriage right now, and I need you to respect that boundary. So that's one of the ways that I've practically learned how to protect her. So other folks, other examples from your experience, friendships, relationships.
You know, I had the opportunity yesterday, as a matter of fact. I was at work. We were trying to wrap some things up. It's a short week, and we were busy. Gretch texts me and says, hey, she's a brownie troop leader. So she says, hey, I got to pick up a whole bunch of things that are it's in a kind of a tough part of town. And can you leave work early to go over and do this? Because I don't want to leave, you know, Gracie in the car and try to run and do these things. And my boy would say, I'm in the middle of work and I'm doing these things and, you know, brownies and financial success, you know, how can I? And you know, and it occurred to me that I just learned this. I can step up to the plate and actually be a protector and step in and on a physical, take her place and do some things and look out for her feelings and her behavior. And so I said, okay, here's my chance. This is kind of a Holy Spirit gift of let's go ahead and do this and be a man. And driving over there, I thought, hey, this is pretty exciting that I already got an opportunity. Maybe a check will ask this question tomorrow night. But,
Chuck, one thing for me, in terms of with a close friend, this girl confided in me about just some dark things in the past, and in terms of sexual abuse, and I think maybe my tendency in the past would have been, oh, I need to fix this. I'm going to get revenge. I want to let's really just kind of cut her off and try to find a solution. And I feel that God's really been working in me to say, hey, all right, let's listen, let's open the Bible, let's pray, let's let the Holy Spirit work and uncover the lies that resulted from the situation and really be there as a comfort rather than a guy that's going to fix everything when Jesus is the only one that really can.
Let me shift to another question, kind of connects to what you said about giving space and room for the Holy Spirit. One of the questions is, what role does surrender to the Holy Spirit play in us men working harder and manning up? We've been talking about manning up. There's actions, but how do you guys link that to this, you know, biblical concept of surrendering to the Spirit? Tony, Chris?
Well, for me, it all starts and ends with Jesus Christ. You know, it wasn't easy for me to come up here and admit that, you know, I had a room full of my nephews. But, you know, in fact, that was the first time I even thought about it without crying, you know. And even when I was practicing with Alberta, she says, how in the world are you going to get through that? You know, I don't know, sweetie, I don't know. But and what I found in my life is that it begins and it ends with Jesus for me. You know, ever since I first made the decision to let him be the leader of my life, then, I mean, it all boils down to him. I mean, there's most decisions I make and most of everything I do, working here, for instance, you know, I didn't even know. That was when I decided to leave Johnson Controls. I didn't know where I was going. I just knew what I was not going to do, and it just so happens that I just went out in faith, and a spot was open right where I had been volunteering for the last 8 years. And so for me, you know, it just starts and ends with Jesus.
Yeah. And let me just put a spin on that too, guys. What practically do you do in your life to surrender to Jesus? What is that practical? What practical rhythms or just, you know, giving people some specific examples around that?
I try to, for the past year, I try to surround myself at least once a week outside of normal Crossroads hours with like-minded individuals who have the same goals in mind spiritually and have the same goals of being where they want to be as men. It's difficult to do on a regular basis, but I try my hardest.
Yeah, you make it a priority. And
correct.
I mean, that's a critical one, is being in community. Other thoughts on that?
Chuck, what I do every morning is I try to spend 15, 20 minutes in just meditation and asking the same prayer, really, God, how can I do something that I could look back and be proud of, how I was extraordinary in the service I provided, or can you give me a direction in my life that I can do in a way that would be extraordinary for you, and then let that thought lead me in a direction, you know?
One more thing on that, just for me, I've really found the rhythm of getting in the Psalms as a man seeing David's heart just pouring out to God. I really find just myself just going through a couple of days has really given me this sense of, okay, this is a man after God's own heart, and this is who I want to model after, and I can come at God and with any type of emotion, and he's going to be there and he's going to listen.
This one is from a newly married guy. He says, I just got married. Any thoughts about how to navigate between a culture that runs after God and a culture that runs after quote-unquote success in terms of job, money, sex, power? Where does God connect to you as you lead your family and throw yourself into work? So I would say, you know, all of us could speak to just the work aspect of this or anything else
married.
That resonates. So I know you're not married, but I was going to say you could speak to the work aspect of it.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And actually, you should be happy to know there's going to be some women in the audience who are very happy you're not married. So I'm not reading everything that I got through here. I have to have a filter, but. Oh, man.
Who's taking that one?
Well, there's three married guys up here,
right.
So.
Well, for me, one of the hardest things I had to learn was to see things from Alberta's standpoint, you know, because I was so into wanting to be right, you know, I'm right, you know, and even my apologies used to sound like, I said I'm sorry, why are you still tripping, you know? And so I really had to learn to, you know, feel things that she feels, and now I can a lot of times get there ahead of the apologies by not doing what I'm going to have to apologize for later anyway.
Look, one of the things I think might be helpful too for a newly married guy, there's a group, Fathers, and actually Lou leads that group. And so I think the priorities in Fathers, why don't you just walk through those? For me, that was a helpful framework to just say, okay, here's how God looks at priorities, and this is something that we can start even pre-marriage. So
yeah, and really one of the pillars of Fathers is calendaring, and calendaring is you gotta decide what the priority in your life from a time standpoint is going to be, and so we get out our calendars and say, okay, number one, family, are we going to put time aside for family? Where is that going to fit into the calendar? Number two, when are we going to have date night? Number three, when are we going to cover these things? And work is work, and it's going to be present all the time in our lives as long as we're on this earth, I think. But how do we decide as a couple what's important to each of you and come to compromise? Because marriage is all compromise. It's you have this covenantal relationship that isn't 50-50. It's how can I give 100%? And again, if I can really be a protector to my wife, she'll feel vulnerable enough to get forward, and I'll be vulnerable enough to give in on things so that we can come to a conclusion that makes sense from a compromise standpoint. Because if you're not careful, you suddenly let everything else in your life dominate that schedule, and you've got to have quality time together. That's just the way it is, especially when you're married to a quality time love language woman, and I happen to be one too, you know. So I think it's you got to set the priorities and the ground rules.
Yeah, and for me, the counterintuitive twist on the priorities and Fathers is, you know, obviously God first, but then the next one is you, like taking care of yourself. Because, and Brian's really said this to me, really helped me understand, the best thing that I can give to my family is a fueled and fired up me. That's the best thing I can give to Maria and my kids. And so that has to be a priority of how am I taking care of myself. Then the marriage, and then your children and then work. And you know, that doesn't mean that, you know, work isn't a priority, because it is, because it's one of the ways you take care of, you know, your family. But that idea of, as a man, looking for those places and saying, what do I need to do to make sure I'm in the healthiest place that I can be for all of the other responsibilities? That's one of the ways you protect. You know, one of the ways you protect is you take care of yourself. You protect what God's given you, the resources he's given you, physically, emotionally, spiritually, relationally. So I think that's another one. So,
Chuck, don't you think if you get to the point where you can identify what are your unique abilities, what are the things that God's blessed you with that you can't wait to do, and you can't wait to do that on a daily basis, and it just energizes you, then all of a sudden you're a different person for your family and your wife.
Sure.
You know, because you haven't struggled through the grind of a day, but you've actually been energized by what you're giving and what you're getting back from your career.
For sure. Mm-hmm. Got time for probably one more question. So I'll leave this one, and I'd love for all of you guys to answer this. So this series clearly tapped into something in men. It clearly tapped into something in all of you. What's the one thing you're going to do to keep the momentum going from what God's taught you? Right, coming out of here, we talk about men having a vision for your life. What's your vision as you think about how am I going to continue to go down this path? What's the one thing you're going to do to continue the momentum you've gained in this series?
I think for me, it's holding some of my friends accountable by doing that. It keeps it fresh in my mind that I need to work on myself as well. And, you know, with that said, if you can change, you know, one of your friends, how they act, and have them on the same page, I think that'll help hold me accountable. And I really hope that men leaving this series, it's a great 5 weeks, that momentum just, you know, stand.
Well, for me, it might sound kind of silly, but I got a Facebook page. You know? And the reason I say that is because I wanted nothing to do with social media whatsoever. You know, the people that I want to be in contact with, I'm in contact with them anyway.
Are you one of those people? We had a survey a couple weeks ago, people who don't use the internet. Are you one of those people, Tony?
Well, no, I use the internet, and I use it up. But the only reason I got the Facebook page was to keep in contact with my nieces and nephews. And that's part of me aggressively going, you know, so that I can keep, you know, what's going on with your life, you know. And what I did was, maybe I didn't do it right, but I was beginning to post a prayer request Thursday. So every Thursday, I'm going, okay, what's going on in your life? What do you need prayer at? And so I'm trying to be aggressively going, because, you know, like I said before, once they're gone, it's too late.
That's good. Wow. One of the questions I didn't offer up was, they wanted to know, when is Pastor Tony Wolfolk speaking at Crossroads? So, good stuff, man. You just got good wisdom. I'm so glad you're sharing this. Ryan, how about you?
Yeah, I think the main thing for me going forward, just to echo what's been said, just the whole idea of just not letting it stop here, and firing up other men around me, other guys my age, you know, in terms of guys in their 20s, it's not the church is not the most likely place you're going to find them, and it's great to engage with friends, and just getting that discipleship model, and saying, you know what, here's what God's done in my life, let me share with you, and let's do life together, and let's let iron sharpen iron, and let's see what God does.
That's awesome.
You know, one of the progressive revelations, I think, of this year that I've had in fathers in particular, is that this is a battle. Going back to our journey, you know. It's really a battle between God's way of doing things in our life and the world's way, and it's not something that I'm going to go through the series and go, oh, well, that's fixed. I'll never have to worry about that again, and then I walk away. This is a day-to-day constant decision of whether I'm going to be a boy or a man. Am I going to do this decision, or am I going to do something else? And that is going to be the rest of my life. And one of the things that I've really found that it's helpful for me is, if I know I'm going to teach something like this, I really got to pay attention to what you're saying. Not that I wouldn't.
Yeah,
not that I wouldn't.
Right.
And so everything that was just covered in this is completely applicable to Father's Group, which meets every Friday morning at 6 a.m., by the way, from September to May. And so this is going to be part of Father's going forward, because it has to be. Yeah. I mean, we can't go into Father's trying to change how we are as effective fathers and husbands without being men.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can't be boys and do that.
That's good work.
So that's how I intend to do it.
Awesome. Yeah. Let's thank these guys again for offering up their time, wisdom.
Thank you, buddy.
So appreciate you guys. All right. So in our final couple minutes together, I'm actually going to invite the band to come out, and we're going to have a time of communion. One of the other things that we do when we come together at last Wednesday is we have communion together. And specifically, communion is a time for us to remember, a time to remember what it is that Jesus has done for us and sacrificing for us and laying down his life for us so that we can actually be the new men and women that God calls us to be. You know, I keep thinking about these five marks. And I really believe that this is an inspired perspective that God has given really to Brian, because if you think about it, these are the things that Jesus did and continues to do for people who are in relationship with him. He has a vision. He has a vision. He is going somewhere, and he invites us to go with him. He took a minority position. He did what no other quote-unquote God would ever do, which is become flesh. And in doing that, Jesus worked. He actually did the work that we could never do by living the perfect life and laying down his life for ours. He was the ultimate, consummate team player. His whole idea, the whole vision he had was that we would be a part of his family, that we would be a part of his team. And so I just think about how he protected us through what he did. And, you know, that's why these things resonate. But I would say if you are an average guy, there have been moments even tonight where you've been inspired, and there have been moments tonight where you've been deeply challenged and maybe even discouraged, because there's another voice that certainly is in the room tonight. It's in the room tonight for women who are saying, I want a man in my life like this, or I want my husband to be more like this. It's the voice of, am I worthy? It's the voice of, will this ever happen to me? The voice that says to you guys, you know what? You've already made way too many mistakes. The voice that says to you know what? Man, if you had just gotten started on this a little bit earlier, maybe you'd be able to do this. Or the voice that just says, you'll never be this man. And I want you to know tonight, when we take communion, one of the things that we can remember is what Paul, who was a rock star in the scriptures, had to recognize about his life. Because in all of his good things, Paul says, I had this thorn, I had this weakness. There was this part of me where I never measured up. There was this part of me that never seemed to be at the level that I desired. And in 2 Corinthians 12, the Spirit reminded him that my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. And tonight, as we take communion, I'm going to invite the volunteers who are serving communion to come to their stations. Tonight, it's an opportunity for us, men and women, to remember that there is a grace that is sufficient for all of the places that we lack. So guys, for all the places that we lack on these five marks, there's a grace that's sufficient. For women in here, all the places that you're not the woman you want to be, there's a grace that is sufficient for you. And tonight, as we take communion, it's a chance for us to remember and receive once again the grace that Jesus offers. So tonight, when you come up for communion as a follower of Jesus, you're going to take a piece of bread. The volunteers will tell you that this is a reminder that Christ's body has been broken for you. And then you'll dip it into either wine or grape juice. And that's a reminder of the blood that Christ shed for you. So tonight, as we just remember what Jesus did and long to be that way, let's remember that there is a grace that is sufficient for all the places we lack. The table of the Lord is open for all who will receive communion.